All right, welcome everyone to another deep dive. Today we're going to be looking at a really important early Supreme Court case.
Okay.
Chisholm v. Georgia, 1793.
Wow, early.
Yeah, so this is, you know, not too long after the Constitution's been ratified, and it's really the first time that the Supreme Court is going to decide if federal judicial power, like from the courts, actually extended to the states.
Oh, interesting. So like, can a federal court tell a state what to do?
That's the question. And the answer to that question, the way that the Supreme Court answered it, actually led to a constitutional amendment to overturn the decision.
Wow. So right off the bat, we're dealing with something that really shook up the early U.S.
Yeah, definitely set the stage for how the balance of power between states and the federal government was gonna play out.
So to really understand how big of a deal this was, I think we have to put ourselves back in that time.
Right.
We're talking just a few years after the Revolution.
Right.
You know, these states, they saw themselves as pretty much independent, each of them. You know, they just fought a war to get away from a strong central government.
Right, exactly.
Then they come together, create the Constitution, try to balance things out. But then you have Article 3 of the Constitution, and it seems to say that a citizen of one state can sue another state, right, in federal court.
Right.
And that's a problem for these states. I mean, their whole idea for centuries, really, was this concept of sovereign immunity.
Yeah, sovereign immunity.
You can't just sue a king, right? You need their permission. And these states, they felt they were basically mini kings in their own right.
Yeah, I mean, you can imagine how, you know, states would have been very reluctant to give up that kind of power, that kind of protection.
Absolutely.
So let's get into the specifics of Chisholm. We have Robert Farquhar, a merchant from South Carolina. He supplies Georgia during the Revolutionary War with like a huge amount of goods. I think it was like $170,000 worth.
That's a lot of money even now. Back then, that must have been.
Yeah, a fortune, a serious amount. But Georgia, they don't pay up. And then Farquhar, he dies in 1784.
Okay.
So Chisholm, he's the executor of Farquhar's estate.
Yeah.
He's like, all right, we're going to get this money. We're going to federal court.
I mean, from his perspective, he's probably thinking, open and shut case, right? I got the Constitution on my side.
Yeah, you would think, right? But Georgia, their response was basically to say, nope, we're not even showing up.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they basically said, we are a sovereign state. You can't sue us without our permission.
So they're invoking that sovereign immunity idea, really putting it to the test.
Exactly. So now the Supreme Court has this huge question in front of them. Does that part of Article 3, the part that says federal courts can handle disputes between a state and a citizen of another state.
Right.
Does that override a state's claim of being, you know, untouchable, basically?
Ah, the classic federalism dilemma, you know, where does the power lie?
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so let's get into the arguments a little bit. So Chisholm's side, you know, the guy who's trying to get the money, Edmund Randolph, who was the U.S. Attorney General at the time.
Yeah.
He's arguing the case for Chisholm. And his argument's pretty straightforward.
Keep it simple.
He's like, just read Article 3, Section 2. It says federal courts have power over cases between a state and a citizen of another state. There's no exception for sovereign immunity mentioned.
So it's a textual argument. You know, the words are clear, black and white.
Right, right. What about Georgia? What was their main point, even though they weren't actually in court?
Well, they argued, in essence, that the concept of sovereign immunity was just so fundamental, so deeply rooted in legal tradition, going all the way back to English common law, that it didn't need to be spelled out in the Constitution. It was just assumed. And since the Constitution didn't say you couldn't sue a state, it meant you still couldn't.
Oh, interesting. So they're basically saying the absence of an explicit statement about sovereign immunity means it still applies.
Right, exactly. It was such a core principle, they argued, that to overturn it, the Constitution would have to be super clear about it.
So we've got this battle of legal ideas. On one side, the clear text of the Constitution. On the other, this deep-seated tradition of sovereign immunity.
Yeah.
What did the Supreme Court do with this?
Well, in a 4-1 decision, they went with Chisholm.
Oh, wow.
They said pretty emphatically that Georgia could be sued.
So big win for federal power in this case.
Yeah, pretty big deal.
All right, so let's break down that majority opinion. Who were the justices on that side, and what were their big reasons for deciding this way?
Okay, so the majority was Chief Justice John Jay and Justices James Wilson, John Blair, and William Cushing.
Right.
Now, John Jay, he argued that when the states joined the United States, when they signed on to the Constitution, they knew they were giving up some of their sovereignty.
Sure.
They were agreeing to be bound by federal law in certain areas. And this, mm-hmm. you know, disputes with citizens of other states. This was one of those areas. It's like, you can't have your cake and eat it, too. You can't be part of the club and then right. refuse to play by the rules.
Right. You got to accept the responsibilities that come with being part of the union.
Exactly.
Now, James Wilson, he also had a pretty interesting take, right? Like focusing on where sovereignty ultimately resides.
Yeah. James Wilson, he was really big on the idea of popular sovereignty. Like the people are the ultimate source of power, not the states.
Right.
And the Constitution, it's a document created by the people for the people. So the federal courts, they're there to protect individual rights, even if it means going up against a state.
So it's not just about states versus the federal government. It's about individual people and their rights within that whole system.
Right, exactly. And he has this amazing quote that really gets to the heart of it. He says, "The Constitution is a people's charter, not a treaty between kings."
Wow.
Like, boom, right there, that's the shift in thinking.
Yeah, that really puts it into perspective. Okay, so we've got Jay focusing on the agreement the states made, Wilson highlighting the role of the people and the federal courts. What about Blair and Cushing? Did they add anything specific?
Well, they were mostly on board with this idea of the states being equally accountable under the Constitution. Once they're in the Union, they're bound by the rules, including the ones about federal court jurisdiction.
So a pretty solid front on the majority opinion. But then we have Justice Iredell, the lone dissenter. What was he thinking? Why did he disagree?
So Iredell, he really believed in the sanctity of state sovereign immunity. Like, it was sacred, untouchable. He felt it was so ingrained in legal tradition, you know, going back to English common law, that it didn't need to be spelled out in the Constitution.
Okay, yeah.
He argued that the fact that the Constitution didn't explicitly get rid of sovereign immunity meant the states still had it.
Uh-huh.
And he saw this as essential for protecting the state's independence within the federal system.
So for him, it was all about what the Constitution didn't say rather than what it did say.
Right. He felt the majority was reading too much into it, going too far.
Okay, so we have this really fundamental difference in how they're interpreting the Constitution. But at the end of the day, the Supreme Court ruled, and according to their decision, Georgia could be sued. Case closed, right?
Well, not quite. This is where things get really interesting because the states, let's just say they weren't thrilled with this decision.
Yeah, I bet they weren't.
Understatement of the year. The reaction was fast, furious, and pretty much universal. I mean, they saw Chisholm as a direct attack on their sovereignty. It was like, whoa, the federal government is trying to take over.
Yeah, you can imagine the outrage.
Oh, it was huge. The governor of Georgia, he even warned that it threatened their very existence as states. They were really worried that this would open the floodgates to lawsuits from all over, basically making them powerless against the federal courts.
Wow, so this wasn't just a legal decision, it was a political earthquake.
It absolutely was. And they weren't just going to sit back and take it.
So what did they do? How did they fight back?
Well, they went straight to the Constitution. In 1794, just a year after Chisholm, Congress proposed the 11th Amendment.
The 11th Amendment.
And it got ratified super fast in 1795. That shows you how much the states wanted to fix what they saw as a huge problem.
Okay, so what does the 11th Amendment actually say? How does it address the Chisholm situation?
All right, so the 11th Amendment says that federal courts can't hear cases where a state is being sued by a citizen of another state or by a citizen of a foreign country unless the state agrees to it.
Okay, so basically the opposite of what the Supreme Court had decided in Chisholm.
Right, they basically said, Supreme Court, you got it wrong. We're putting this in the Constitution so there's no confusion.
Wow, a direct reversal.
Right.
So does that mean Chisholm v. Georgia is basically irrelevant now? Just a footnote in history?
Not at all. Even though it got overruled, Chisholm is super important for understanding how American federalism developed. It shows this constant tension between federal power and state power. It raises all these questions about state accountability and how far the federal government can go.
Right, that push and pull between the different levels of government.
Exactly. And that tension is still relevant today. You know, we're still debating these issues.
Yeah, that's a great point. So looking back at Chisholm, what are the big takeaways here? What should our listeners really remember about this case?
Okay, so first, Chisholm really shows how powerful the Supreme Court is. They get to interpret the Constitution, and that interpretation can have huge consequences.
Right. They're the ones who decide what the Constitution means in practice.
Exactly. And Chisholm was a big swing for federal power. It said, hey, the federal courts can tell states what to do in certain situations. And that was a really new and controversial idea back then.
And the reaction to Chisholm also highlights another really important aspect of the Constitution.
Yeah, what's that?
It's not set in stone. It
Yeah.
can be changed.
Oh, you mean the amendment process?
Exactly.
Yeah.
If enough states think the Supreme Court got it wrong, they can fix it by adding an amendment. And that's exactly what happened with the 11th Amendment.
Right, a real-life example of the checks and balances system in action.
For our listeners who might be law students, I think there's a really important lesson here, too.
Definitely. Chisholm is a great case study for different ways to interpret the Constitution. You see the majority taking a very literal approach, focusing on the actual words.
For the textualist view.
Right. But then you have Iredell with his dissent, and he's more focused on historical tradition and what's implied by the Constitution, not just what's written down.
So it shows you how the same document can be read in very different ways, and those different interpretations can lead to very different outcomes.
Absolutely. And for anyone studying constitutional law, it's a reminder to always check for amendments. The original text is important, but amendments can change everything.
Absolutely. Well, this has been a really fascinating look at a case that, even though it was overturned, still has a lot to teach us about the early years of the United States and the balance of power between the federal government and the states.
I agree. Chisholm v. Georgia, it's a case that continues to resonate.
So here's something to think about as we wrap up. Given how quickly and forcefully the states responded to Chisholm, what did that tell us about how they viewed their own sovereignty back then compared to the power of the federal government? And how do you think this tension between states and the federal government is still playing out today? You know, think about recent Supreme Court cases, political debates, all of that.
Yeah.
Chisholm shows us that how we interpret the Constitution can have huge real-world consequences. It can literally change the balance of power in our country. Anyway, thanks for joining us for another deep dive. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for having me.